Let's have an AA meeting.
Let's have one.
My name is Lisa, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Lisa.
Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club. Where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual and our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. So I met this gentleman several years ago and leading different meetings, or just he was very, very energetic. And I came across him again several months ago at a retreat that I went to that was just awesome, and we connected. And I Jeff is just so excited about Alcoholics Anonymous, and it just comes through in everything the way he is. So he just is. So I give you Jeff.
Family, I'm Jeff. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
good to see everybody. This is a big crowd. I didn't realize there were going to be this many people here. So, anyway, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. My sobriety date is October 14th, 2006. And that gives me just under 15 years sober today. And I've got a sponsor. I've got lots of sponsees. They've been following me around too much. I told them I'll stay home tonight. They're sick of hearing my story. So I do want to tell you this before I get started. I absolutely, just like Lisa said, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did not always love Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in here, I got here 23 years ago, and for 8 years, I just sat in the chairs without getting a sponsor and without doing the work. And, you know, I came here because I needed to come here just to stay sober, but I didn't realize I was a ticking time bomb because I did not do the work. Guys like Rusty, who is in here, he was one of the guys that used to come up to me and say, Jeff, you may want to think about getting a sponsor. You may want to think about doing the work. He knew. He saw the train wreck coming. And, you know, my last relapse almost killed me, and it woke me up. So let me start off early on. I grew up in a small farm town in upstate New York. My dad was a World War II hero, and he'd been, I mean, like everybody in town, even the World War II vets, looked up to my dad because of some of the stuff that Iwo Jima did it. And I remember as a kid always trying to get my dad's approval, and I just really couldn't. He had two things. He was either stone cold silent or violently angry. That was it with him. So I didn't really get shown any love. With my mom on the other side, she was Catholic, involved in the Catholic Church, involved in service work. She really did a lot of things that I learned about doing it here in AA. She really gave of herself. And so that was my upbringing as a kid. I had a lot of problems as a kid with behavioral problems. I think I was a test child for Ritalin back. I'm pretty sure that's what it was. I've talked to my brothers about it. They were giving me something, and I couldn't stand it. Now, if I'd known what it was today, of course I would have said, give me more. But I was just, I don't know, probably 8 years old, 10 years old, and I didn't want anything to do with it. I didn't always start off an alcoholic. I know some people came in first time they had a drink. They, you know, when I was 8, 9, 10 years old, I could have 3 beers and call it a night. For me, it kind of hit me a little bit later on. I'll get to. So I had a pretty good upbringing, except for when I was 8 years old, my mom was given 6 months to live with metastatic breast cancer, and then kind of a dark cloud came over the household. My father became very violent and drunk and drinking all the time. He went from kind of drinking some, where my mom seemed to keep him in, to drinking alcoholically. And he became very physically violent in the household and with everybody, and it was pretty ugly. So anyway, she passed away. I was about 11 years old, and I remember just thinking, man, you know, I mean, I hate that this happened, but I'm also free. I can do whatever I want. And because he wasn't in control of anything, he would go out on 5-day benders, 10-day benders and drink. And so I've basically raised my little brother. In the meantime, I don't know, I was about 14 or 15 years old. I started selling botanicals in town so that I could get what I wanted. So I got a motocross bike. And I ended up when I was 16. Yeah, I get a driver's license when I was 16 in New York. And I got Mopar muscle cars. So I was always like, had the stuff around. And I was raising hell and I was having fun. And I liked the girls and I liked the partying. But I was not drinking alcoholically yet. I mean, I could easily have 4 beers and go home and call it a night at age 16, age 17. And then what happened was I got held back a year. Oh, by the way, I'm in and out of jail all the time, getting in trouble all the time, getting arrested. I have something really bad goes down when I'm 16 years old. And a guy dies, and I happen to be on the scene at the time. And so I got sent back a year from school. And so now I'm about 18 years old. I'm in my senior year, and my father comes to me and says, "You got to get out of town. They're coming after you." So I'm living in town selling the botanicals, but I'm about to get caught. So I remembered one of my botanical dealers had moved to some place that I had never heard of before called, y'all may have heard of it, Panama City, Florida. So I'm 18 years old. I've never seen the ocean. Little farm boy. And I go down to Panama City, Florida to live with those guys. There was 2 sons my age and then the guy. So anyway, I go down there and I'll never forget. I'm 18 years old and I go down to Panama City Beach where Club La Vila is now. And the song Cool in the Gang, Celebration had just come out. And I'm telling you, it was working back then. Alcohol was working for me. I was having a blast. I'm still getting in some trouble with alcohol, but I'm having a blast. And I go down to Miracle Strip, and I'll never forget. I look around as far as my eyes can see in the middle of the day, and there's girls drunk in bikinis. And that was my first taste of the fourth dimension. And really from there, it was all kind of downhill. I accelerated my drinking. I stopped smoking the botanicals, and I just really started drinking a lot. And so I'm age 20, 21. I go down to the Keys in Florida, and I get a job on a commercial fishing boat, and we're going out and working these outrageous hours, working really hard, and I just stop drinking. And it's so easy for me to just stop drinking, right, and partying, really. And so I'm loving this. I'm going out to the ocean every day. I'm 21 years old, and really enjoying Mother Nature and everything at a scale I never had before. And then so I ended up a couple of years later going to Panama City for one more spring break. And then I came up because I was like, enough of this working on these boats, man. This is hard work. I don't have enough time to party. Went to Panama City, had another run there for the spring break. And then I came up to Atlanta where my brother lived. And I came up here to go to school. And but I ended up getting a job at TGI Fridays, waiting tables. And from there, I just started partying and not really talking about school. I was just having fun partying. My drinking is starting to escalate. I'm starting to get DUIs now. And I'm starting to touch other things, you know, the dry goods and stuff. And the girls are always around all this stuff. I'm always around the girls and partying and closing down the bars at night. But I still haven't really crossed the line. I'm a hard drinker right now. And I get a job in my late 20s. I start working in the nightclubs bartending. I got a job at Club Rio, which is where Rob Lowe took home the underage girls from. And that was like hottest nightclub in Atlanta. All the stars are going there, the athletes. And then I leave there and I go to a place in Buckhead that ended up being the hottest nightclub and dance club in Atlanta for several years. And that was where I started going like this. So now I'm getting involved more in the dry goods and partying, and I'm drinking and drinking and more heavier and heavier. And I crossed the line. I started taking classes at Georgia State University, and I had not even, you know, I was a high school dropout. So I had to take these remedial classes. But I learned at age 30
if I started drinking the night before, I would not make class the next day. We recognize that in this room as the allergy setting in. Once I start, I don't have control of the amount I drink. I don't know what's going on, but I just know it's a bad idea to drink the nights that I got school the next day. So I start working my school schedule around drinking. So I just go to school on Tuesdays and Thursdays and make sure I don't get too early in the morning. And I'm taking 11:30 classes at 9, and so I'm doing that. And then I'm bartending on the weekends. And I'm going in, and as the years go by, it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. I'm starting to really experience consequences. I remember landing in the hospital one time with acute pancreatitis after a Jose Cuervo run. I remember going to jail or going in an ambulance to. Anybody ever wake up in a gurney handcuffed to it? That is not. Okay. That shit usually doesn't happen to normal drinkers. Okay? So for me, I'm starting to have these experiences, but if somebody came to me and said, you're drinking alcoholically, I would still wouldn't be able to hear them because I'm having so much fun. But I've entered the consequence phase where I'm really starting to get bad. And now I'm doing the dry goods, and so I can drink more. And I'm with these guys at the bar that I know today. And here's really important part of this before I go to the next part of my story. I'm with them. We are all doing tons of dry goods. We open up at 8 o'clock at night. We close at 4 in the morning. And then we keep the bar open and have kind of a private party there until 9, 10 in the morning. So I'm running. I'm charged up. I'm fired up. We close down the bar. I'm still grinding it. And, it's 9 in the morning. And the people I'm bartending with start yawning. Oh, man, I got to get going, man. And I never could do that. And I used to ask them, did you go home and go to sleep? How the hell did you go home and go to sleep? I can't go home and go to sleep. So I would go to the 24-hour clubs and finish my run. And these guys that drank and did everything just as much as me would go home and go to sleep. They would just decide they're not going to have any more. I had lost that ability to do that when I was about age 29 or 30. I had gone from hard drinking to a real alcoholic, the guy on page 21. I did not know what had happened to me. So now I'm starting to meet a girl. She shows me how to do other stuff with the dry goods. Now I'm really gone down. So now I noticed I need to stop drinking, or I need to stop doing this other stuff. That's my problem. But I noticed every time I have a draft beer, by the end of the night, I'm down at the bluff. And I can't figure this out. What's going on? So I was like, I'm going to need, because I got this other problem, and I guess I'll just stop drinking for a while so that I can disconnect from whatever this thing is going on. Well, guess what? I find out, and I'm probably 35 at this time, age 35. This is 1995 or so. I find out that I can't do it. And I have never in my life been able to not do something. My dad taught me that as a kid. And, I put my mind to something. I do it. I got over a lot of hard stuff when I was a kid. I raised my little brother. I put myself through school. I did a lot of stuff. But this thing I don't realize, this thing has me. And it's way more powerful than me. I keep trying. I keep going down after 5 days off or after 12 days. I remember one time I got 5 weeks or so. I go down and have one draft beer, bluff, end of the night, 5-day run, wake up in my bed in a sweat ball, crying, going, how did this happen again? What's the matter with me? I used to want to do something. I used to want to be somebody. And all I'm doing is disappointing everybody around me. All I'm doing is letting everybody down, including myself. I am waking up in the morning going, what is the matter with you? What has happened to you? You're running. Now my relationships with roommates, with people that I'm working with neighbors, with the law, with everything is starting to disintegrate around me, with family members. And the one that was really getting me was my relationship with women. It was getting so ugly. I was like, what has happened to me, man? Could it stop? And I stopped for another 5 weeks. One draft beer, bluff, wake up in a sweat ball, never doing this again. If you hooked me up to a lie detector test, I would have passed it every time that I woke up and said, I'm never doing this again. Yet I kept on doing it. And I remember one time, and see if you hook up with this, I woke up one morning, I am done. No more. And 2 hours later, I'm driving down to the bluff crying, asking, what is the matter with you, Jeff? I have no idea that I'm suffering from alcohol addiction and that I have no control over this. So I called one of my old buddies that I used to run with before, and he'd called me every year telling me he was hadn't had a drink. And I was like, I saw him last night, as a matter of fact. Him and I are still buddies. He 12-stepped me. Listen to this. He brings, you tell me this is a coincidence. I'm from this little small farm town. He 12-steps me in 1997. And he brings a guy with him. And the guy is the guy that I used to go to high school with at my hometown. You tell me that's a coincidence. I got so many of those stories. I just know there are no coincidences. God's all over my story. So I go in, and I think that I've just got this problem with the other stuff. And I go in, and I start realizing I've got a problem with alcohol, too. And it never dawned on me that I had a problem with alcohol. When I got in Charter Peachford, I had told myself it ain't that bad except for this other stuff. I got a mind that I still got to watch today tell me it ain't that bad. I got a mind that will lie to me and tell me it ain't that bad. That's why I need sponsorship. That's why I need to do a step 10 at night. I need to keep an eye on what my head is telling me. Because at the root of my problem is my thinking. The main problem of the alcoholic lies in his mind, in my thinking. And that thing can still get me sometimes. I've learned that the whole deal with this program is to work through steps 4 through 9 so I can plug into this power so that I can start getting direction and intuition from the power. Not from this thing. This thing still will mislead me. So the whole deal behind the steps 4 through 9 is to plug into power, to start getting guidance and direction in life, and then 10, 11, and 12 to stay plugged in and then to work with others. So I don't learn fast. I'm a slow learner. And I'm going to A&A meetings, and I'm sitting in the back, and I don't need all that y'all need. Because I have succeeded where y'all have failed. Y'all need that praying stuff. Oh, y'all need a spot. I'm not telling you this. This is what this thing's telling me. I managed to eke out a while. You know, I might smoke a little weed here, take some pills here and there, but I had 8 years sober. Right? Just as this thing was telling me that. So at 8 years, ticking time bomb finally went off. And I want, at this point, I've graduated from college. I now have a career. I'm married. It is a totally different deal. And another thing, miscalculation of mine was, if I ever go back out, I'll just do what I did before. Well, guess what? That option was not on the table anymore. I learned that this is a progressive disease, and just as I'm not doing anything for those 8 years, except taking some pills and smoking weed and stuff like that, that the disease is progressing in me. And when I pick back up, I did not pick up where I left off. And now I'm married. I got all this stuff going on. I'm picking up one white chip after another. And I'm doing these dive. I mean, it's one time I'm in the fax room at work. I have no control what I'm going to pick up. And the owner of the company's down there. And I get, my pupils are like this big. So I'm on a run with something else, you know, scared of alcohol, so I'll try something else. And then another time, the owner of the company's 16-year-old daughter is down there in a sundress, and she's standing over here, and there's a window behind her, the sun shining through. I said something to her. I woke up the next morning and said, dude, you are out! Because if she had told her dad, that was it. She apparently did not tell her dad. She works there. Oh, that's funny. So we get along pretty good. But I've been at that company the same. I've been at that company for 23 years. And they don't know about this run. So if anybody's there, they don't know about this run I had 14 years ago. So anyway, I had another relapse. And I got women involved in my relapses. But now I'm married. But now I got, you know, I can party. Right? Party! So I'm doing what I do, and lying and cheating and doing what I do when I'm doing my thing. And I almost get run over by an 18-wheeler. I'm driving home like this. This is my last white chip. And I wake up encrusted in dried blood on the bed because I cracked my skull open when I got home. Supposed to meet my wife at 8 o'clock for dinner. It's 8 o'clock. I overshot the mark with what I did, so I'm still fried and wasted. And I cracked my head open, so I'm encrusted in dried blood on the pillow as she's yelling at me. And I'm remembering the 18-wheeler horn. Today, to this day, I when I hear one of those, it scares the living crap out of me. And I remember almost getting run over by the 18-wheeler and fishtailing in the inside of I-285 before I straightened back out. And I got out on my knees after that and rolled down on the bed. And for the first, this was 14 years ago, for the first time in my life, I was like, God, if you exist, please help me. And I meant it. For the first time, I knew I was going to freaking die if I didn't do something different. What was the problem? I was trying to do what I'd done before. That's why I kept on picking up all those white chips. So I come in and I meet this guy. I pray for the first time, like, God, please help me. I get led, another coincidence, I get led to this meeting. It's a big book study. He's talking stuff I've never heard before, and he's in more about alcoholism, coincidence. And he's talking about relapsing, and he said, how many times, and he said, you know, how many times have you heard somebody come in off a relapse and say X, Y, Z, you know? And I'm like shaking my head going, yeah, I got a lot of that going on right now. I got a lot of stress in my life. I mean, the wife, yeah, things aren't going well at home. And I don't know if I'm going to get fired from my job, what they know. And he said, that's not what this book is telling me. He said, how many times have you ever heard somebody come in off a relapse and say the reason why they relapsed was because they never followed the clear-cut directions in the big book to have a spiritual awakening? Boom. I walked up to him. I asked him to work with me, to sponsor me. He was retired. I met him every day for an hour. I got through the steps. He took me through every single word of the first 164. We went through every sentence, every paragraph, and he said, if you do what this book says, you're going to get the success rate that they had in the old days. In Pass It On, it talks about a 93% success rate in the Cleveland group. When that book came out, that's what they had. 9 out of 10 people came in and never picked up again. He said, Jeff, is that what you want? Because you're lost. You've been picking up white chips. And I said, that's exactly what I want. And then forward to the second edition, and 15 years later, it talks about a 75% success rate. He said, the good news, Jeff, is if you want that, it's right here. It's right here in the book. I did everything that he said, or that the book said. I went through and followed all the directions, and my life changed. I got hit by lightning. This isn't usual, but 2.5 weeks later, I got freaking hit by lightning, burning bush. I didn't see anything, but I mean, I felt something flowed through me, an energy flowed through me that was so phenomenal and incredible. I thought I was high. I almost wanted to go pick up a white chip because I was like, whatever just happened to me, that's the best buzz I've ever had in my life. I've since seen it happen to some of my sponsees. It usually happens slower. So if that doesn't happen to you, don't think that anything's wrong. It's rare what happened to me. Ever since then, I've been chasing that buzz. Ever since then, I've been like, I know whatever that was not from this earth. So how did I do that? How did I plug into that power? How did I develop that relationship with God? It just started actually there. Step two, I've already told you, step one, step two, I had this issue with God. My mom died a horrible, grisly, awful death. And I left that Catholic church at age 11 and said, you hypocrites. You didn't help my family. None of my mother's family members that were all religious, none of them helped me. I'm being raised by an alcoholic father, and I'm having to raise my little brother by myself. You guys can all kiss my butt. I'm done with the church. And I come in, and when I hear the word God, I've got adrenaline surging through my veins. I'm so angry. What I've come to learn was what was really going on was I was scared to death. Because I said, if that's the way out. I've tried that. That ain't going to work for me. I was wrong. That's why I was so angry. I learned later what it really was. The anger was fear. So we got to step two, and he showed me in We Agnostics. This was a game changer. I went from a religious God that I grew up with to a spiritual God. He showed me in the book where it said, we found the great reality deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there he can be found. And I said, aha! But God is everywhere. He said, but Jeff, you haven't found him yet. Look inside. The big book is saying you got to find him there. I heard a spiritual mentor of mine say that once that God must first reveal himself within you before he will fully reveal himself to you. That has been my experience. I went from the religious God up in the sky to starting to develop my own relationship with a higher power. That's step two. That's step three. The whole deal is about that. How do I turn my will and my life over, my thoughts and my actions over the care of God? My self-destructive thinking that always leads to my self-destructive actions, which includes jail, broken relationships, but just disappointment in every level, letting everybody down around me, that kind of thinking, and always ultimately picking up a white chip. How do I change that? That's step three, and it tells me I do it by doing step four through nine. I got to clear this channel that's all clogged. I got to clear this channel. The channel from the power of the Spirit within me so that it could connect out here. I got to clear this channel. So, four through nine. Four, I learned at five. I did not know how consumed with fear I was until I did the fifth step. I was absolutely... my sponsor told me, you're afraid of people, you're afraid of everything, you're riddled with fear. It says in the big book, driven by 100 forms of fear. Driven. It means I'm not in control of anything. The fear is in charge of my life. I don't even see any of that. I tell my sponsor, I'm not afraid of anything. That's what I believed. I do this fifth step and man, it was the truth was revealed to me that I was scared of everybody. I realized I was waking up every day before I did that fifth with my sword going out in the world trying to protect myself from y'all. And when I did that fifth step, I realized y'all can't hurt me. I was giving everybody the power. I was so terrified about what you thought about me. Look, in self-approval, I was a self-seeking machine. I wanted your approval. That's what it was. Once I realized that you guys couldn't, and I could see the insanity on my fifth step, I now can see through that defect when it shows up. I can see right through it and go, nope, you care what they think, and it doesn't matter what they think. It's none of your business. Another thing that happened in step five was I threw every ugly, nasty, dark thing about myself for the first time in my life. I threw it up on a table and I put a spotlight on it and I let another human being see it. And guess what happened? He didn't get up and run out the window. I couldn't believe it. He looked at me and said, is that it? And I was like, yeah, I guess so. He said, there's not anything on there. I don't hear all the time, even in open discussion meetings. And I was like, wow. So I learned something. I made a spiritual connection with another human being. It says in the Five Promises, where we used to have spiritual beliefs up here, whatever it was, now I begin to have a spiritual experience. Because I did. I opened up to the universe. That channel opened up. I realized it's okay. I just let somebody all the way in and they didn't judge me. Maybe I'm okay. So, step six and seven. Those were the two steps that I didn't realize till later on, until about eight, maybe 5 years sober. I went through this real rut. So I'm living up, you know, I'm going to open discussion meetings. I had this burning bush experience. I'm telling everybody what this big book means. I'm a, you know, thumper, and I'm, you know, I'm all certain about my shares and stuff. And I don't see what's happening. And now all of a sudden I'm living that double life again where I'm supposed to be Mr. Spiritual Jeff. And I got crap going on. And I don't want to tell you guys about it because I'm Mr. Spiritual Jeff. What will you guys think about me? So I burned myself into the ground again at 5 years sober. Depression has never been one of my real big things, but I got depressed. I got depressed. I'm dropping F-bombs at God. Why is this happening to me? Why do these defects keep showing up? I learned since then, everything changed for me after that. I realized I was suffering from spiritual pride and that all I am is just another knucklehead in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm no better. I'm no worse than anybody here. I'm just an average knucklehead trying to get better every day, trying to live one day at a time with these spiritual principles. I do stupid stuff all the time. Guess what? I'm okay with that because I do a lot of good stuff too today. So I take the good with the bad with myself. I thank God every morning for the gifts He's given me and I ask Him to take away some of these little things. I don't know what's supposed to be taken away. It says He knows what's supposed to be taken away. I don't know what's useful to you guys. So step 9, amends. I will tell you this. I still got 10 minutes, right?
Yes.
Good. So step 9, amends. I told you. Nothing happens in God's universe by mistake. Listen to this. 2 years ago, I'm on the way to Fifth Tradition, my home group. It's Saturday night. I have a series of events that just keep impeding me and getting in my way. And I'm on 285. I start off an hour later than I normally do. Because I don't know about y'all, I like to get there half hour early, throw my keys in my seat so some damn newcomer doesn't steal it. Because, you know, I got my seat, right? And get there a half hour early, get my cup of coffee, that crappy cup of coffee they serve over there, and get to talk to some people. That's my little thing, right? Well, I get stuck on I-285, there's an accident, and I'm sitting there watching the clock. I used to get there at 6:30, right? So I'm watching the clock tick, arm tick, and I'm not moving for like 25 minutes. It's 5 till 7. I'm about a 6-minute drive away, and I'm still stuck in traffic. So I launch off an F-bomb in my car, and I do something just very unusual. After the F-bomb, I was like, oh, you're on a real spiritual piece of work today, Jeff. You're on your way to a spiritual meeting to talk spirituality, and you're dropping F-bombs in your car. And I pulled my rearview mirror down, and I said out loud in my car, you know nothing happens in God's world by mistake. And I put it back. I said that out loud. So I put it back up, and then the traffic breaks about 7:01, I remember. And I'm like, oh, that's right. We got a 15-minute speaker, 10-minute break. And then we have a long speaker, so I'm like, I'll go to this coffee shop that's on the way. I've been there several times. So I'll go there and I'll get there at the break and I'll get a good cup of coffee, right? And that's what I thought when I told God nothing happened. I was like, okay, you got me. You just wanted me to surrender. This is how it always works in my life. Surrender, and then He shows up. So I go in the coffee shop. It's usually packed. Usually 20, 30 people there on Saturday nights. There's only 2 people there. And it's just 2 years ago. And I'm like, the barista and this guy sitting there reading a book by himself. And I hear the barista says something to him, and then I hear him saying something. I'm like, I know that dude. And I stopped frozen in my track, and I started calculating the future value of a dollar from 1980. It's my old roommate from 1981. I hadn't seen him since. At the top of my amends list. Sitting there waiting for me. You tell me that was a coincidence. That was one of them. That was a bazooka shot of God just letting me know, dude, I'm right here. I went over and I sat down next to Chris. I told him I owed him money. He goes, I know you do. He'd been holding on to that all those years. That's exactly what he said in an angry tone. I know you do. And I said, can I have a seat? Instead of a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, he was like, really? He goes, God, I thought you'd be dead by now the way you drank. I didn't realize I was drinking heavy in 1981. And I sat there for 2 hours, missed the meeting. We had a great time. He absolutely refused to take the money. He was so happy to hear that I was okay and that I changed my life around and that I was helping others. This is the AA of my life. Another thing, anyway, another amends. When I was about 2 months before my mom died of cancer, she had me doing some housework and I was all angry and upset. And I said, I hope you die of cancer.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. The big book talks about how to make that amends. I flew up to New York to her grave. and I wrote a goodbye letter to her because I'd never had a good goodbye, and I made that amends to her. And, you know, sometimes we've done things in our life that sometimes are a little hard to still live with, but I don't have to drink about it over time. I haven't had to drink over that today. I got good enough with it with my mom, and I know she's shining down on me, so happy and proud of me. I know that. But so let's go to step 12. I had two sponsees at 2 months sober. I was going to Ridgeview looking. I just had to pass. I was like, I got to give this away. I'm like I am today. So you can imagine, right? I just got hit by lightning. I was worse then. Oh, I got to find sponsees to give this to. I've been on fire ever since. Let me tell you a couple things that have happened to me. Some of the promises. My brother called me. I had 1 year sober at the time, but he'd known I had been coming to AA for nine years at the time. And he'd known my life got a lot better. He was an alcoholic, and I never pushed it on him. I never told him he needed to stop drinking. I'd watch him pass out, drink himself to sleep every night in his easy chair. His wife would call me sometimes and said, yeah, it's getting worse. And so anyway, he has a bad experience. Things are getting real bad. I don't know how bad it is. He calls me and says, Jeff, she asked for a divorce. I just happened to be going through a divorce, too. My wife couldn't put up with the cheating that I was doing. So we went our own. So we're both going through a divorce. He's up in York, Pennsylvania. I don't know what kind of AA they got up there. So I say, Fritz, why don't you let me take you through the first 5 steps? Because I want to take you through the book the way somebody did me. I get him to the frickin' 5th step. And he tells me, right before he called me, he had a gun in his mouth. That man, I'm going up again. We're going on a retreat. My little brother's in AA. My older brother Fritz is in AA. They are I love those guys. They're passing this message up where they are. They're both message carriers. They're doing what I'm doing. AA saved not only my life, because I'd be long dead by now. It saved both of my brother's lives. I mean, this is amazing. Y'all got to get in on this ride. The way that it happened was I followed the directions in the big book that had the 93% success rate in the Cleveland group. That's how I did it. I got a sponsor that took me through the big book. I did what the big book said. My guys usually can't get through it in 2.5 weeks. But, I can usually get them through it in a few months. Another thing that happened to me, I have everything good in my life has come from this program. I thought that when I got here, the party was over. I was like, oh, I'm not going to be able to party anymore. Let me tell you what it was like the 30 days before I got here. I was holed up in my room, naked, watching porno, hadn't drank. I had sores all over my body. The whole freaking room smelled like baby oil. I'm pissing in Schlitz ball liquor bottles, and I hadn't slept in 30 days. Okay? Look at folks, I got something to tell you. That ain't partying. That ain't partying. I have a mind that tells me, it's like the old days. I cannot remember with sufficient force of memory that 30 days before I got here. I can't remember that. I was not partying. Those last 2 years of my youth drinking and using were the hardest, ugliest, loneliest years of my life. I had run everybody out of my life. I was of value to no one. I was a disappointment to everyone. I let down everybody that gave me a chance, and I just was like, I'm a loser. I did not realize till I got in here, Jeff, I am not a loser. My thinking is messed up. If I can clear up my thinking, and if I can start getting direction, open up this channel, start getting direction from one who has all power, one who has all knowledge. When I do that, follow these directions, all of a sudden the real me wakes up. The real me is the spiritual part of me. The real me isn't the guy that was cheating on his wife. The real me isn't the one that was losing all those jobs and ripping everybody off and doing what I do when I'm doing my thing. That wasn't the real me. The real me is the one that has the spiritual, that cares about people. Let me tell you something. This has been one hell of a ride. At 14 years sober, for the first time, I had someone who I love dearly that called me her AA dad. She sat in front of me in my big book study on Wednesday nights. Elisa's been to it. And I watched this girl. She had ran into a police officer and almost killed him in a DUI. She'd had a DUI just a couple months before that. Not good. Because of COVID, her court sentence gets delayed. And she gets a chance to sit there and go through the book in my big book study that we do on Wednesday nights. Right from the first page all the way through. She went through the book. Heather's her sponsor. Heather sponsored her. And I watched that girl have a spiritual experience right in front of my eyes. She called me her AA dad. I was kind of like her spiritual mentor. Heather was her sponsor. And then she went to court and we didn't think she was going to get any prison time because she sold all her assets. She's 30 years old. Beautiful woman. She went to college overseas. Had everything going on for her. And she sold everything off and gave this cop $500,000. Now she's broke. She doesn't have a job or anything else, but gives him. And he said, I'm not going to ask for jail time. Gets to court. I want her to have jail time. Judge, 15 years.
No.
Then he's 5 served. Let me just talk about how he experienced me. The night he gave her the weekend to go home. She called me the night before she went in. She didn't say, I'm scared. She didn't say, oh my God, this is unfair. I can't believe the cop. She called me to thank me for having my part in preparing her for going to prison. I couldn't believe it. And she said they took the ankle bracelet off, Jeff, and I didn't even want to drink this weekend. It was the last thing from my mind. Blew my mind. And then she wrote me a letter from prison and told me when I told her about my mom, what I said to my mom, it was one of the first meetings she went to, long before I really even knew her, and she said, when I heard you say that, it gave me hope that I might be able to get this. Me telling you the worst thing I ever did in my life gave that little girl hope. And I became her AA dad. She sent me a letter from prison, Happy Father's Day. Y'all, I don't have any kids. I can't tell you. Stick around, roll up your sleeves, go through the work, follow the clear-cut directions in this book, and I'm telling you, you're in for the ride of your lives. It doesn't work when I'm sitting in the back of the room not doing the deal. This is an all-or-nothing program. It's funny in Alcoholics Anonymous, a lot of us are all-or-nothing people except when it comes to the steps. There, we're half measures. Yes, everything else, I'm all the way in, right? Oh, those steps, man. Hold on. If I apply that all or nothing and get in here and really do this deal, I am telling you there's stuff waiting for you. No matter what you think, no matter what you believe, there's something waiting for you at the end of this that will blow your mind. Thanks for letting me share. Following me, feeling like I.
sun I'll never see.